ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय आरहे महारत्न विमानसत्संकुलम् जुस्तं पुण्याजनस्त्रिभिः यथाकं सततद्घनम्.
The airplanes of the heavenly denizens are bedecked with pearls, gold, and many valuable jewels. The heavenly denizens are compared to clouds in the sky decorated with occasional flashes of electric lightning. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The airplanes described in this verse are different from the airplanes of which we have experience. In the Srimad Bhagavatam and all the Vedic literatures, there are many descriptions of Vimana, which means airplanes. On different planets, there are different kinds of airplanes. On this gross planet Earth, there are airplanes run by machine. But on other planets, the airplanes are run not by machine, but by mantric hymns. They are also used especially for enjoyment by the denizens of the heavenly planets, so that they can go from one planet to another. On other planets, which are called Siddha Lokas, the denizens can travel from one planet to another without airplanes. The beautiful airplanes from the heavenly planets are compared here to the sky, because they fly in the sky. The passengers are compared to the clouds. The beautiful damsels, the wives of the denizens of the heavenly planets, are compared to lightning. In summation, the airplanes with their passengers, which came from higher planets to Kailash, were very pleasant to look at. The airplanes of the heavenly denizens are bedecked with pearls, gold, and many valuable jewels. The heavenly denizens are compared to the clouds in the sky, decorated with occasional flashes of electric lightning. Today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4. Chapter 6, entitled Brahma Satisfies Lord Shiva, Text 27. In the previous verses, the very instructive narration of Daksha's offense to Lord Shiva are presented. Daksha was such an exalted person that when he came into the room, the greatest of sages, Brahmins, demigods stood up out of respect to welcome him. His birth, he was a direct descendant of Lord Brahma. Extraordinarily learned, very powerful, beautiful, charismatic. He had so many amazingly good qualities. So much so that the rulers of the universe, the descendants of Bhrigu, they all stood up in reverence to receive him. Although he had all these qualities, and he was a great Prajapati, he would get his daughters married to people like Kashyapa Muni, such great person. He was not ordinary. But there was envy in his heart. Where there is pride, there must be envy. We become proud because we think ourselves the doer. When we think ourselves the doer, and we want to enjoy what we do, who we are, that pratishta puts us in competition with others. And therefore, envy. When we're envious, we want what somebody else has. And with our intelligence, we can justify in so many ways to prove to ourselves, to prove to ourselves, to others, that we're not actually envious. It's just my service. But Krishna's within the heart, and he sees our purpose. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada gives an example of a dog. This dog works very hard in order to obtain a bone. Bones are very attractive to dogs. To us, they're disgusting. They just bury it or throw it away or something, a bone. But to dog, it is greatest treasure, a bone. It shows how everything is so relevant. I mean, so relative. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagarati samyam. Yasyam jagarati samyam. That verse in Bhagavad Gita, that what is night for an ordinary person is the time of awakening for a devotee. People of this world are very much awake to sense gratification, both gross and subtle. But for an introspective sage, they are very much asleep to those things. They're very much awake to humble devotional service to the Supreme Lord, to fixing their mind on the Supreme Lord by hearing and chanting his glories. And to ordinary people, they are sound asleep to those things. For one who is actually tasting the sweetness of Krishna consciousness, the satisfactions of this world are like a contaminated, filthy bone. Yamunacharya, he says, the king of all pleasures, sex life, he says, when I used to enjoy this, but now just the thought of it makes me spit at the thought. My lips curl in distaste. How is that? Srila Prabhupada says, for a devotee, gold, which is so precious to materialistic people, is as abominable as yellow stool, which is what people with jaundice create. Diseased. Yesterday, His Holiness Navayoganja Swami Maharaj was citing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye. Mama janmani janmani shwari bhavatad bhakti rahaiti kitvai. Wealth, beautiful women, followers, prestige, liberation. Artha, kama, dhamma, moksha, people are striving for these things. But for a devotee, it's all like that abominable bone. But the whole materialistic civilization, especially here in Bombay, is working so hard to get those bones. Yes? Struggling. Fighting. Making enemies with their own family members. Making enemies with people in general. Cutting people's throats. Riding on horrible, crowded trains and traffic. And foaming at the mouth, working for what? For a devotee, all they're working for, it's like that, is as worthless as that bone. Sense gratification. But for dog, there's no greater treasure than that bone. Put a bone here and have nice Srimad Bhagavatam class here. Where will the dog go? So yes, this particular dog, he worked very hard to get a bone. And he got it. My bone. Ruff, ruff. He had his bone in his mouth, locked in that mouth. He wasn't going to let anyone else take it away. But then he happened to come to a river. Small river, Prabhupada said. And he looked down into the river, and he happened to see a dog with a really good bone in his mouth. Of course, it was his own reflection. But he didn't see that. He just saw another dog with a bone in its mouth. And he was thinking, if I had that bone too. He was envious of that dog who had that bone. So he decided, I'm going to get it. And he lunged in to try to get that bone from that other dog. But in the process, he dropped his own bone into the river. And the result? He dove into a reflection and lost his bone. So Srila Prabhupada tells in this regard, this is the nature of envy. We can never get enough in this world. Whether it's gross sense gratification, or whether it's the subtle gratification for profit, adoration, distinction, you can never get enough. Why we can never get enough? Because the whole purpose why you were in this world is we're trying to be God. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He is Purusha. Our constitutional nature is Prakriti. We are meant to be enjoyed by God. If we can simply accept this principle and serve Krishna to be enjoyed by Him, Krishna shares all of His ecstasies with us. His ecstasies are supreme. He fills us with His love, with His ananda. But if we want to be that God, if we want to be the proprietor, the controller, and the enjoyer, then Krishna just withdraws. He withdraws the yoga maya potency and puts us under the control of the Mahamaya potency, Bahiranga Shakti. And here, everyone is trying to be enjoyer, which means everyone is trying to take the role of God. And therefore, God's potential to enjoy is unlimited. And the spirit soul is trying to find, ultimately, the ecstasy of love of God, which is unlimited. As long as we're looking, as long as the soul needs desperately that love of God, which is unlimited, all the pleasures of this world are so sickeningly limited and temporary. Therefore, we can never be satisfied. Hiranyakashipu, as an example, he was the king of the universe. He had all the demigods bowing down to him. Even the sage Narada would bow down to him. But was it enough? Not at all. And if you had all that, you would not be satisfied either. Burns like fire. The more you give material desires, the more it needs. And therefore, if someone else has something equal to or better than yourself, you want to get it. Give a child the toy that he or she's been longing for so long. Be happy for a while. But then that child will see some other toys that other kids are playing with. And they won't be happy without that. Yes. It's human nature. And in the process of trying to get something we can never get, we lose what we have. That is material life, according to this analogy of Srila Prabhupada. So here we have daksha. We're giving a Vedic psychological analysis of daksha today, according to Srila Prabhupada's standards. Here we have daksha. He has the most unbelievable position. So much respect, so much honor. Everyone's standing up. But he was envious of Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva had some things that he did not have. He was more worshipable than him. Shiva is more worshipable than Daksha. And what made things even more excruciating is Shiva was his son-in-law. So he considered, according to the material conception, that I am in a superior position as his father-in-law. It wasn't that he just didn't stand. It's that he envied him from the first place. And for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Shiva didn't dishonor him. He just didn't stand up. He was absorbed in thinking of Krishna. So Daksha lost complete control of his mind. Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava. The desire for prestige is subtle lust. Krishna says, lust is the all-devouring enemy within this material existence. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is later transformed into wrath, because it can't be satisfied. Daksha, his lust for prestige. It was no insult. It wasn't like everybody was thinking, oh, Daksha, just see, you're not so great. Lord Shiva didn't even stand up for you. Everyone stood up with reverence. Nobody expected Shiva to stand up. But it was intolerable to Daksha.
And he blasphemed Shiva. So bad he blasphemed Shiva. And there were curses and counter curses, and Shiva left. And we know the story of how Sati wanted to go because there was going to be a beautiful sacrifice that her father, Daksha, was going to be performing. And so many of her relatives and friends and attractive people were coming to this social event. She wanted to go. Lord Shankar warned her, "Your father is not favorable to me." But she insisted. So she went. And when Daksha blasphemed Shiva, he tolerated it. That's the difference between a great soul. Shiva was a well-wisher to Daksha. He just didn't stand up because he was meditating on Krishna. And there was no reason for him to. And Daksha went completely furious because of that. And Daksha's blaspheming Shiva. And blaspheming horribly. And Shiva was not he was not disturbed. He remained sober. Didn't retaliate. Just left. But Daksha was cruel to Sati by ignoring her. And she knew that he's ignoring me because of my relationship with my husband. And she could not tolerate. I will not live in this body that is connected to Daksha if he is so envious of my lord and husband. You know this story. By her yogic powers, her body went ablaze into fire. Now Shiva had to teach Daksha a good lesson. He insulted his devotee who was so dear to him, so beloved to him, his own consort. He insulted her so bad that she couldn't even live. Shiva created Birabhadra. And along with his associates, they caused havoc in that sacrifice and a whole vivid description. And ultimately, Birbhadra picked up Daksha in the same sacrificial cutting machine that was meant to cut the head of a goat. He stuck Daksha's head in there. And cut off his head. But that wasn't enough. Because by yogic powers, you might be able to put his head back together. He took the head and threw it in the southern corner of the sacred fire. The head burned, finished, nothing left. Everybody, the followers of Shiva, were joyous. They were jubilant. They were celebrating. Whereas the Brahmins and the demigods and everyone else was horrified. What happened? Now, Brahma and Vishnu knew. They didn't come to that sacrifice because they knew something like this was going to happen. So Brahma tells the demigods, because you offended a great soul, therefore your whole sacrifice was ruined. Whatever sacrifice we're doing, if we offend great souls, it's ruined. Because sacrifice is yajna. And Lord Vishnu or Krishna is yajna purusha. He's the enjoyer of sacrifice. The only purpose of a sacrifice is to please the Supreme Lord.
If you offend his devotee, no matter what sacrifice you do, he's not pleased. It's ruined. Like Bali Maharaj. He was doing a sacrifice. Big, big sacrifice. Under the supervision of Shukracharya, his guru. And then Vamanadev comes and asks for 3 steps of land. Like a little beggar, Brahmachari. And Shukracharya says, don't give it. Bali Maharaj was going to give it. He said, don't. You already said, don't give it. He's Vishnu. With 2 steps, he's going to take everything you have, and then with the 3rd step, you're not going to be able to pay him back, and he's going to punish you. And Shukracharya was very expert. He says, you won't be violating any principles. Because truthfulness is very important, but for the sake of saving yourself in an emergency situation, or for the sake of saving other living beings in an emergency situation, there's an exception where you could bend the truth or not follow what you have said, promised. Yes? You don't have to follow, you fulfill your promise. So he gave him every justification. And not only that, he ordered him not to give Vamanadev anything. But Bali Maharaj was the grandson of Prahlad. And he decided, let anything happen to me, but I will not violate my promise to a Brahmin. Shukracharya cursed him. You'll lose everything. And this is not like a curse from your husband or your wife. This is a curse from Shukracharya, who previously, now please understand, Bali Maharaj fought the demons. I mean, fought the demigods. He fought the demigods previously, and he was killed. The Devatas lost the whole battle, and Bali was dead. Shukracharya, by his brahminical powers, he brought Bali back to life. He rose from the dead. And the principal asuras, who were Bali's best generals and fighters and ministers, he brought them back to life too. They were dead. Not only bring them back to life, but he empowered them with so much shakti that they could defeat Indra. Can you imagine? That was Shukracharya's power. And Bali Maharaj knew it full well. He was defeated. He was dead. And by Shukracharya and the Brahminical descendants of Bhrigu, they did yajnas. And Bali Maharaj not only came back to life, but conquered the universe. Hare Krishna. It's this Shukracharya who's cursing him. It's very serious. You will lose everything. You will displease me and lose everything. Bali Maharaj, for the sake of maintaining his promise to Vamanadev, for the price of maintaining his integrity, he wasn't just taking a risk. It was not like, maybe I'll lose everything. Maybe I'll get cursed. It was a fact. It was for sure. It was the word of Shukracharya. Atma Nivedanam. He was willing to surrender everything for this little dwarf. It's Bali Maharaj. And you know how Vamanadev said thank you, and then he just grew from a dwarf to this unlimited personality who took 2 steps and covered the universe. 2nd step, he hit the outer covering. Ganga came through.
causal ocean. And he tied up Bali Maharaj, imprisoned him in front of everybody. And of course, Vamana said, you promised me 3 steps, where's the 3rd step? Place it on my head. I've given you everything but my life. Now I surrender my life. Vamana Dev was so pleased with Bali Maharaj. At the end of the whole yajna, at the end of this whole scene, Vamana Dev turns toward Shukracharya and says, now you are his guru. Please, in the execution of Bali's yajna, whatever faults he has done, please tell us what it is, and then if you can perform some yajna to rectify those faults. Because performing yajna, especially in those ages of Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, everything had to be perfect. Faults could become disastrous. But even then, Shukracharya said, whatever faults may be in a yajna, whatever discrepancies, they are all completely nullified and everything becomes all auspicious when the devotee chants your holy name. Yajyai Sankirtanapayaya. In the age of Kali Yuga, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specially descends to teach the most powerful of all yajnas, the only one that works in Kali Yuga. Nam Sankirtan, chanting of the names. What a wonderful connection. Shukracharya himself says, in any discrepancy, in any fault, in performing a yajna, it's all nullified and everything becomes all auspicious when one chants your holy name, my Lord. So since people are so unqualified and have such weak intelligence, such weak facilities, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, why, if everything becomes auspicious, just by chanting the holy name, just chant the holy name. You don't have to do all these other things. Just chant the holy name. It's the only yajna that is relevant in the age of Kali. Other yajnas may create auspiciousness, help to make people take their vows seriously and all of these other things. But factually, in the all the yajnas, what make the yajna really is throughout it, we're chanting the Lord's names. So, what is the first offense to the chanting of the holy names? To blaspheme those devotees who have dedicated their life to propagating the glories of the holy name. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it is the mad elephant offense. We have this little garden that's growing of our bhakti that we're watering by hearing and chanting and rendering service. But when we blaspheme devotees, it's like letting a mad elephant into that garden. What chance? So even in the way, way back in the Satya Yuga, Daksha, he had Bhrigu's own descendants performing this yajna. And Shukracharya was overseeing it. They were really good. But it was all completely spoiled because they offended Lord Shiva. That's what Brahma says. You offended a great soul, the whole yajna is spoiled. And similarly, in this yajna of the chanting of the holy names, if we offend great souls, it very much disturbs our yajna. Narottam Das Thakur says, if you offend a great Vaishnava, if you offend Krishna, you chant his holy name, and you'll be delivered. But if you offend a Vaishnava, even the chanting of the holy names, Krishna is very, very disturbed. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, there were offenders. Mahaprabhu didn't say chant Hare Krishna. He said, go to that person with a seriously repentant heart and beg forgiveness. Only then will you be able to chant the holy name and attain love of God. Sachimata was constantly chanting the holy names. Lord Chaitanya said, I will not give her love of God because she offended Advaitacharya. Only if she takes the dust of his feet with a sincere, repentant heart will the holy name deliver her. So Brahma is explaining, in essence, these principles in this chapter. And he's telling demigods, now we should all go to Kailash and we should beg forgiveness for Lord Shiva for all that has happened. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. He's such a great Vaishnav. Certainly he will forgive us. Lord Shiva drank the whole ocean of poison just to show compassion to all living entities. So in this particular verse, we find the demigods on their celestial airplanes traveling to Kailash. And it's a beautiful description of what Kailash is like. Today when you go to Mount Kailash here, you just see snow. We know some devotees who have gone to Mansarovar near Kailash, and there are all kinds of austerities they're performing. Getting sick, and getting dizzy from the heights. But we see, for the demigods, Mount Kailash, it's a beautiful place. It's beyond the heavens. And here these celestial planes are coming down. And Prabhupada is explaining the nature of these planes, airplanes. Today, we think we are very advanced with our, Prabhupada would call them aeroplanes. With our aeroplanes. They're becoming bigger and bigger. But as they become bigger, they become louder. They pollute the atmosphere more and more. And if the bigger they are, the harder they fall if they crash too. Right? A little plane, you know, if it crashes, you know, two people die. A bigger plane, 100 people die. A bigger plane, 400 people die. Now they're making planes where 800 people will die. So technology is very nice, but all along with it comes increased danger for more people's lives and increased pollution to the whole atmosphere. So much fuel. Massive fuel. To fly an aeroplane from Bombay to New York. Some of you could do research if you really want to. And if you do, please tell me what you find. How much does it cost in fuel for those gigantic 747 jets to fly? It might be tens and thousands of dollars in fuel. It's massive. Just burning it. And why is fuel prices going up, 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 up? Why is oil prices going up? The reason is because the oil's down. Do you know why America became the giant economic nation of the world? Because of its oil fields. It was the only country that was really drilling oil. And they had large amounts of oil in the states of Oklahoma, Texas, and those places. And therefore, they were exporting oil wherever people needed it. Especially around the time of World War II. World War I, World War II, they were just drilling oil. And they had so much. And therefore they had so much power in the sense of being able to power material things. But now, why they don't drill oil? Because they drilled so much. The oil's way, way, way down now. They got everything from the top. It's like if there's a well of water that's on the top, and you take everything from there, and there's nothing else coming in. You have to go down and down and lower and lower and lower, and you have to put the bucket lower. At the beginning, you just dip the bucket and go. Then a little later, you have to put a rope on it and go. Then a little later, down and down, and soon you're going, help me, help me, help me. It's so far down. So the oil's going so far down, and it costs so much money to get it from way, way down there. It's a big problem. People can't afford it. So then they start going to other countries where it's not so far down, but it's going down everywhere. Rio. So these big, big airplanes, someday, it's going to cost about $10,000 to fly on those big airplanes because the oil is going to be so costly. But the demigods' airplanes, no problem. It's no economic problem, no pollution. Vedic hymns. They're just chanting these wonderful mantric hymns, Prabhupada says. The power of sound. Even on the gross material level, we see how sound affects people. Technology is so much centered around sound vibration. The great yogis, they understand the inner essence of the sound vibration and how to invoke powers from sound. Instead of digging deep, 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 deep in the earth for some oil to get something to power an airplane, because their consciousness is so deep, they can actually excavate deep down into the sound vibration of a mantra and bring out powers infinitely greater than oil. This is advanced civilization. So in this way, the demigods are flying nicely, and there's no danger. The demigods' airplanes, they don't need runways. They can go in the fog. they don't need all kinds of security. And there's no danger. They don't even have safety belts or vomit bags. They're playing completely nice. They don't even get jet lag. Can you imagine? If I fly to Calcutta, I get jet lag. Demigods can fly from planet to planet and there's no jet lag. So nice. Because of the way they're traveling. So they're all coming to meet Lord Shiva to beg forgiveness so that they can complete the yajna. And what we'll find in future pages is Lord Shiva, when they're begging forgiveness, and Daksha saying, you know, forgive Daksha too. I mean, Brahma is saying, please forgive this Daksha too. Lord Shiva says, actually, I was never even angry. I just had to teach him a lesson, that's all. He was so covered over. He's my son-in-law. My father-in-law. I had to teach him a lesson. I had to teach him a lesson. I had to teach the world a lesson. Actually, I like Daksha. He wasn't angry. He wasn't envious. And Lord Shiva brought Daksha back to life. But he wanted to teach him a lesson he would never forget. And Lord Shiva's expert. Lord Shiva could have put any head on Daksha. Yes? He could have put the head of a Gandharva, even better than Daksha's head used to be. But Lord Shiva put the head of a goat. Haribo. That way he would not forget this lesson. Every time he looked himself in the mirror, I'm not going to ever, ever, ever offend a Vaishnava again. No, no, no. So Lord Shiva had no envy, he had no hatred, even to the person who was trying to destroy him. He was compassionate. He was his well-wisher. And that is this beautiful story. Brajahari Prabhu, is anything? You wanted me to speak something about Rath Yatra. I'll just speak for a couple minutes. Tomorrow is Rath Yatra of Lord Jagannath. But this story is important because we celebrate Rath Yatra with Nam Sankirtan, and we want the Nam Sankirtan to be successful, not only for our own purification, but for the whole world. And if we're chanting the holy names and we're not offending others, then it's the greatest sacrifice. It's a great success. In fact, in one place in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raises both of his hands and says, just do two things and I will deliver you. Chant the holy names and do not criticize others. Very powerful statement. It's a sacrifice. Srila Prabhupada tells us that the internal significance of Rath Yatra is to celebrate Sri Radharani and the Brijabasis' visit to Kurukshetra. When Krishna was only approximately 12 and a half years old, I'm sorry, 10 and a half years old, he left Vrindavan. He was about 11 years old, actually. When he was about 11 years old, he left Vrindavan and went to Mathura in order to kill Kamsa. And then the Yadus, he brought them all to Dwaraka, where he was ruling along with his grandfather Ugrasena, the whole Yadu dynasty. But the residents of Vrindavan were feeling such deep separation. And then Krishna told them he's coming to Kurukshetra, and he invited them to join for the solar eclipse. Now Srila Prabhupada explains how Rath Yatra means Lord Chaitanya is Radha Bhava Duti Subalitam.
He's Krishna with the devotional sentiments and the complexion of Sri Radharani.
And they wanted to bring Krishna to Vrindavan.
In their hearts, they brought Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra
in chariots from the Dwarka Leela of Kurukshetra to Vrindavan.
And this was the meditation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during the Rath Yatra. He was offering prayers that no one except Swarup Damodar Goswami Maharaj could understand. He was speaking to Lord Jagannath. Amongst these prayers, he said, Krishna, that we are meeting here just like we were meeting together when we were very young. But I want you to bring you back to Vrindavan.
Here, there is the rattling of chariots, crowds of people, horses, elephants.
I want to bring you back to that forest of kadamba trees where there's just the buzzing of bees and the chirping of birds. Do you hear those bees? You hear the birds?
Here you are dressed like a royal prince.
But we want to see you dressed as a simple cowherd boy, holding your flute.
There isn't even one fraction of pleasure that we are experiencing seeing you here as when you were in Vrindavan.
And then Sri Radha says, it is said that the mind and the heart are one, but my mind is identical to Vrindavan. My mind can never be separated from Vrindavan. So please save my life by placing your lotus feet again in Vrindavan.
Why the gopas and gopis' minds cannot be separated from Vrindavan?
Because they know that it is Vrindavan alone that is the place that gives the highest pleasure to Krishna. They have no selfish desires. Their only desire is to give pleasure to Krishna, the highest pleasure to Krishna, the pleasure that Krishna yearns for, and that is only in Vrindavan. Therefore, their unconditional love makes it so their mind cannot be separated from Vrindavan.
Srila Prabhupada, in this regard, explains how the nature of the mind is accepting and rejecting. We accept those things that are favorable for our own personal enjoyment, and we reject those things that impede our personal enjoyment.
It's amazing. That's the way the mind works. Constantly. Birth after birth after birth after birth after birth, we're accepting and rejecting.
Yes.
We accept a friend because they're give us happiness, and then we reject them. We accept a food because it's good for us, and then we reject it later on. Accepting, rejecting.
Now, the path of bhakti is so wonderful.
It doesn't destroy our natural tendencies.
It transcendentalizes them. It transforms them. Now, the Buddhist philosophy is this mind that's always accepting and rejecting, which means also hankering and lamenting. Always caught up with these dualities of hankering, lamenting, accepting, rejecting, and the whole world is just various expansions and manifestations of this accepting, rejecting, hankering, and lamenting, and it causes so many problems. Whatever you accept today causes you misery tomorrow. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. So therefore, Lord, the Buddhist philosophy is, if you want to find peace, if you want to go beyond suffering, no mind. Yes? That is their perfection. No mind. No thought. No more accepting, rejecting, hankering, lamenting. That means no mind. You annihilate your mind. And sunyavad. No mind means void. And the Advaita philosophy is more or less the same principle, but with the conception of a supreme. The supreme is Brahman. But that supreme is without quality, without form, without activities, without desires. It's like void with a positive, with a void in the terminology of a positive power. And ultimately, how to enter into that Brahman? No mind. You have to kill your desires. No more accepting, no more rejecting, no more hankering, no more lamenting. They're causing you bondage. Binding you to dualities. Give them up. Mukti. Nirvana. Liberation. Now you're accepting what's favorable for your sense gratification and rejecting what's unfavorable. You have to give that up. Now bhakti, the perfect, highest, most natural of all spiritual practices, simply puts Krishna in the center. Now the mind is accepting and rejecting according to sense gratification. Srila Rupa Goswami says, what is bhakti about? Accepting what is favorable for devotional service and rejecting what is unfavorable. The same principle. The same identical principle that the mind is immersed in 24 hours a day practically. We're just Krishnizing it. Much easier than annihilating it. And much more effective. And how? How to rise the mind over this accepting and rejecting for material life? By absorbing it in Krishna. And Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So Srila Prabhupada and all of our acharyas declare that when you're absorbed in Krishna, your mind becomes Vrindavan. Prabhupada says it becomes identical to Vrindavan. By hearing about Krishna, by serving Krishna, by worshipping the deity of Krishna, through the 9 processes of devotional service, we just try to keep our mind always busy, accepting what's favorable for devotional service, rejecting what's unfavorable for devotional service. By absorbing our consciousness in Krishna, then we find Vrindavan manifesting within our own hearts. And Srila Prabhupada says, if you have that absorption in your life when you die, naturally you'll go back home, back to Godhead. You've already realized Vrindavan. You're already attached to Vrindavan. So naturally you will go to Vrindavan. So natural, so perfect. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking the words of Sri Radharani, who is himself, is speaking to Jagannath, who is Krishna, that previously you sent Uddhava to teach us how to meditate on your lotus feet. We are not mystic yogis. We don't care anything about this. You're killing us by telling us, meditate on your lotus feet. We're not jnanis. We're not astanga yogis. We're gopis. We want to serve you. We want to please you. And she said that we are drowning in a great ocean of separation from you. And we are being swallowed by the gigantic Timangila fish of our aspiration to personally serve you. And you're telling us to meditate? Srila Prabhupada herein explains how anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmanya navita anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. Pure devotional service is not tainted with the desire for fruitive activities, the desire for liberation, or the desire for mystic powers. Pure devotional service, our only motivation and the process in which we follow is to favorably serve Krishna with love. That's all. As long as we want liberation, as long as we want mystic powers, as long as we want sense gratification or the pleasures of fruitive activities, then our service is contaminated. It is not pure, and it's not really satisfying to Krishna. And here, the gopis, the ultimate personification of the highest level of pure devotion, they are expressing their hearts to Krishna. We only want one thing, to love you and to serve you. And they knew that ultimately Krishna was yearning to come to Vrindavan. And therefore they wanted him to come back for his pleasure only. Longing, yearning, no substitute. Madhavendra Puri, he was suffering separation. It's a great ecstasy, but it appears like suffering. Krishna, you have abandoned me. Where are you? What am I going to do? And Ramchandra Puri saw his guru in this condition and said, meditate on Brahman. Mukti is there. Doesn't seem like this bhakti is working for you. You're miserable. So meditate on Brahman, mukti. Substitute. But Madhavendra Puri, even that's faithfulness, that's chastity. No, I will not accept any other substitute. I'd rather burn in the flames of separation, if that's what my Lord wants, than to be floating around in the Brahma Jyoti saying, I'm liberated. No. So this is what Ratha Yatra is about. It's about developing this unmotivated, uninterrupted service attitude toward the Supreme Lord. And in that spirit, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught before the chariot of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra, before he began the kirtan parties. He offered the prayer, Naham vipro na cha narapatirana vaishya na shudra gopi bhartur bhada kamalayor dasa dasa anudas. My only designation is I'm the servant of the servant of the servant of your servants, anudas. It is this spirit of unconditional love, our aspiration, our purpose. And when we have this, and we perform the yajna before his chariot of Nam Sankirtan, then not only does it purify our own heart, but it purifies the entire world. This Ratha Yatra tomorrow will not only purify you if you are performing it properly, but it will purify Bombay, Maharashtra, India, Asia, the whole earth, the whole universe, the whole cosmic manifestation. Vrindavan Das Thakur said, when devotees raise their arms chanting the holy names together, then the power of the holy name, the purity of the holy name, Krishna and Radharani, like antennas, they're just going not only to come, I'll go back. When they're dancing in kirtan, their feet purify the whole earth. And when they raise their arms, they're purifying the entire universe. Arivo. So with this type of enthusiasm and this type of conviction, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to perform Ratha Yatra as we come together and chant Krishna's holy name. The devotees should be very enthusiastic. It's the one day of the year when we are exposing ourselves to the largest public audience. Yes? How many people? Hundreds and thousands of people will directly or indirectly see this Ratha Yatra and be affected by it. So in the pandal, on the parade, in every way, devotees should really represent Srila Prabhupada the way he wants us to represent him. Imagine, Srila Prabhupada is giving us, by his love and compassion, he is giving us direct entrance into Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal pastime of dancing in the Ratha Yatra, in participating and giving others love of God for Ratha Yatra. We should understand it according to its real value. We see through our ears. We should not try to evaluate by our own mental, intellectual exercises. But through Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and through Prabhupada's own words, we understand what we're involved with when we're participating in Ratha Yatra. It's the eternal pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we are being intimately given entrance. But we will realize our good fortune to the degree we follow these sacred principles. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Raspi Hari Dev ki jai. Radha Raspi Hari. They are not different than Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra. Yes? they are personally coming on the chariots to give their darshan to the whole of Bombay in their form of Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra. It's very special. And Radha Gopinath, Radha Giridhari, they're also there. And even Radha Shyam Sundar from Vrindavan and Radha Madhava from Mayapur and Radha Gokulananda from London. Rukmini Dwarkadish from Los Angeles. All Krishna is appearing as Jagannath to bestow causeless mercy upon all the devotees in all the world. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for giving us this inconceivable blessing. And thank you for participating. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, prasadam for visiting devotee will be served at first floor community hall new building. आगंतुक भक्तों के लिए प्रसादम की व्यवस्था नए बिल्डिंग